Welcome to the Federal IT Challenge. In this episode, we're talking about the keys to tapping into the potential of cloud computing for government. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest, as always, is Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Chief Cloud Officer for VMware U.S. Public Sector. Welcome, Doug.
Thank you. Great to be here, Jason.
Well, let's start with some context for our discussion. Agencies sometimes get a bad rap around innovation. But let's be honest here, there's a lot of technologies that started in the government that have really changed our lives. The internet, for instance, GPS, we all have one of those little screens on our card now. Even 3D computer graphics, if you think about Disney, Pixar, and there's a host of other major technology changes that actually came from the government. But, and there's always a but, agencies also are falling behind in the private sector in the day-to-day business operational areas. There are plenty of examples of agencies using paper when electronic processes are available. And with the broad acceptance of cloud computing, agencies are once again in danger of falling behind in moving commodity IT and business systems to the cloud. The challenge for every agency is how to innovate with less money. Many expect the federal budget of $80 billion to go flat or to go down slightly in 2013. And in fact, Congress hasn't increased federal IT funding really since 2009. But as Federal Chief Information Officer Stephen Van Roekel has said, the agency opportunities to innovate are actually greater today than ever before. The challenge to do that is twofold. How do agencies reduce the number and variety of systems they support? And how do they decide what's the best way to innovate that newfound money into approaches that meet mission better? Overlaid on top of all of this talk about innovation is cloud computing and how agencies can take advantage of virtualization to improve their business processes. And I think, Doug, that's a great place to begin our conversation. So let's start with some basics. Let's define innovation in government terms. You've heard Todd Park speak, the federal CTO lately, or Stephen Van Roekel. They're very much pushing that innovation agenda. But how does Stephen Van Roekel's and Todd Park's idea of to innovate with less play into this idea of what is really innovation when it comes to government?
Well, Jason, you alluded to, there's really two perspectives on innovation in the government. One is the true, pure research and development perspective on innovation. You alluded to the GPS, the internet, 3D graphics, and so on and so forth. And that's an area that I'm really not going to cover today, right? But that's an area where there are very mature investment programs going on through DARPA and other agencies where they're looking forward to working with universities and advancing technologies that we have no idea what the impact's going to be. That's not what we're talking about today. What we're talking about is applying the results of that research to improving the operations of the federal government. That's what we're talking about. And in that respect, there is plenty of opportunity. But in short, I would say that to define innovation, it's doing the same old thing in a very new way or something entirely different to improve the end result. That's innovation.
The idea of don't just pave over your cow paths, right? Don't put lipstick on the pig. What were all those great terms from when Mark Forman was the head of eGov?
I love both of those sayings, and they are both exactly right. It is, not codifying an old manual process with some technology wrapped around it. It is truly innovating to improve both from a streamlining perspective and the efficiency and productivity of the outcome.
So are there examples of technology innovation over the last few years that you can point to? I think that this administration, the last administration, really tried to be innovative as the technology has changed.
One is, as you know, Todd Park, the CTO at OMB, likes to talk about a couple of healthcare examples, and those are very good examples of innovation where, for example, the blue button where veterans and Medicare beneficiaries are able to access and download their healthcare information. That's a nice innovation, adding value to that constituency. Healthcare.gov providing an inventory of both private and public healthcare coverage options. Pretty cool stuff, right? Helping, citizens, weed through a myriad of information in a very streamlined way. But there are other examples, like what the Department of Energy's National Nuclear Security Administration has done with their infrastructure as a service. Hybrid cloud is a great example of innovation, of first starting internal to their agency with a private cloud and then maturing that gradually, as we call it, the journey, right? Maturing that and reaching out into a public cloud provider's infrastructure and marrying those two through a single security and management framework. That is a great example of innovating at the infrastructure level. And then finally, we have DHS, right? Also innovating at the platform as a service level through consolidation of their software development environment through the efforts of the department CIO's office. So we have some great examples of innovation going on in government today.
And in fact, DHS, you bring that up. I was actually at an event recently, and they talked about 12 different services they're taking to the cloud, and most are already in the cloud, except for one they said is still in the pilot stages. But this is even the virtual desktop type thing. This is a test and development in the cloud. Does that innovation, as you're talking about, from whether it the National Nuclear Security Administration or DHS or whomever, is that the same thing you're seeing from maybe some of your commercial clients or some of the private sector companies who are also innovating as it relates to cloud?
Initially, the cloud push was an innovative push from an infrastructure perspective that came from the federal government, right, a couple of years ago. And the federal government took the lead across the United States in industry and demonstrating how cloud could be utilized from an enterprise perspective. But then the private sector quickly took that example and caught up, and then in my view kind of went forward. And by that, we have examples of customers, for example, in the insurance industry that are using the cloud now, not just at the infrastructure level, but completely reinventing their business from a process standpoint and an application standpoint with technology that sits on top of the infrastructure cloud. We have not yet seen the federal government jump to that level, what I would call the software as a service level, and truly innovating to improve the end result, the mission services, like we're seeing in the private sector now.
Where do you think the challenge is for agencies to move where the private sector is? Is it just the comfortability with what cloud is and virtualization and how it works? Or is there something else stopping them, whether it's procurement related or funding related or what?
As you know, anything with respect to the challenges that are faced in the federal government is a very complicated matter. So I will focus on what I think are the big fish here. And the first is of course, security. You know, the security concerns and the security requirements of federal government are a little bit different than in the private sector. Although there's good progress being made there, right?
So you're talking, obviously, FedRAMP is one example, but other people are obviously doing more around security than just GSA and the FedRAMP process.
Exactly. FedRAMP would be one example, but also just the maturity of the technology itself to really address kind of a virtual defense in depth architecture. These things are very, and continuous monitoring, these things are maturing at a nice pace to enable innovation in the government. The other is a budget, right? As we all know, the federal government's under tremendous budget pressure. And one of the nice features and value prop about cloud computing is not only that it's a journey, but the initial stages at the infrastructure level have very, very rapid payback periods on those initial investments. So the money that is being freed up from an operational standpoint is actually presenting itself for reinvestment in weeks. And I'm talking 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 7 weeks after the initial investment. So that actually creates the opportunity to invest in the next stage in the journey, you know, within a matter of months of starting the journey, right? And then finally is the drivers are very, very different in the private sector. You know, we have a tough economic situation right now on a global perspective, and certainly that means national as well. And several innovative companies are just moving out and taking advantage of that dynamic to differentiate so that they can outmaneuver their competition. And in the government sector, you don't have that same driver. Instead, you have the culture, you know, the culture of the way it's always done that needs to be overcome. And these things make it very difficult for the government to get to that level of innovation.
All right, I think that's a great segue for our next section when we talk about how to get to that innovation point. So let's take a quick break. You're listening to the Federal IT Challenge brought to you by VMware on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and I'm speaking with Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Chief Cloud Officer for VMware U.S. Public Sector. Today's topic is the keys to tapping into the potential of cloud computing for the government.
Discover virtualization best practices on storage, networking, performance, and security with VMware at VMware.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Federal IT Challenge brought to you by VMware on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. I'm speaking with Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Chief Cloud Officer for VMware U.S. Public Sector. Today's topic is the keys to tapping into the potential of cloud computing for the government. Now, Doug, before break, we were talking a little bit about what is innovation, how it works in government, how does it maybe differ from the private sector. And one of the things you brought up was the National Nuclear Security Administration and their use of infrastructure as a service. A lot of times when we talk about innovation and where it can begin and where it really can get its foothold is around IaaS. So let's talk a little bit about that concept and how IaaS can lead to innovation for agencies.
Well, simply, and that is a great example at the NNSA, that cloud computing at the infrastructure level provides an optimization of the infrastructure. So it first provides a cost savings compared to the old vertical siloed way of deploying and managing infrastructure. So there's a clear efficiency gain. But then quickly thereafter, there's the ability built into the technology to get additional robustness in terms of service level agreements so that the resiliency of the applications gets better because the infrastructure is performing at a higher level. And then, like I mentioned, the NNSA was able to tap into somebody else's service provider cloud, and that provides this agility, the ability to then optimize and say, this particular public-facing workload is, for example, a .gov kind of a website, is not necessarily needs to stay behind the firewall and run in our private cloud. So we're going to go ahead and push this out to this even higher scale, even lower unit cost environment, and we're going to focus our own private cloud resources on more mission-oriented applications that have unique characteristics and things like that. So it gives the agency the ability to design and execute the cloud the way they want it.
Doug, one of the things that everyone kind of highlights is, well, how much cost savings are we talking about? Can you quantify in that way? Because I think there's some people who are out there who still kind of doubt whether cost savings are real from cloud computing. And if when you look talk to CIOs and others in government, they still have some concerns.
There's no question. I have seen literally dozens, if not hundreds, of examples in the last two or so years of substantial cost savings as a result of the continued journey to cloud computing, even at the infrastructure level. And by that, I mean from a measure of physical environment in terms of reduction from a ratio of easily 5-to-1, upwards to 25-to-1 in terms of the number of servers, for example. So significantly slashing the footprint of the physical environment. And that leads to an ROI, right? This measure of financial efficiency, the return on the investment that I have seen regularly exceeds 20% of that deployment, and in many cases gets up to the 30 plus and even pushes 40%. And so when you're looking at it from a CFO's standpoint, and you know, one of the things that I used to do when I worked in the federal government was provide financial services to other agencies, was that any CFO, private sector or not, is going to jump at a 20 plus percent ROI with a high potential for being successful.
And I think it's good to know that's out there, that you've seen the examples. These aren't just theoretical. These aren't a research report that said, well, you know, we could get up to X amount of percentage. Because I think that's still, you know, are we really going to save money? We know we're going to make things easier through service level agreements. We know we're going to step out of that day-to-day management challenges. But how much savings are we going to get, and how much it depends on volume? Which I think leads us down to the next path of platform as a service. That's another area where agencies are just starting to really understand how innovation can work from a platform perspective.
And that's a great question, because the platform as a service builds upon the infrastructure as a service capabilities that any organization puts in place. So it is a natural progression to go from infrastructure to platform. And there's a couple of basic benefits associated with the platform. On the one hand, it's more complicated. There's a lot more technologies involved, and it's kind of where the end user and the infrastructure meet. So there's a lot of stuff in here. But to simplify, the PaaS environment is about significantly accelerating new software development and feature enhancements on existing software. So it's just rapidly accelerating the timeline of software. Two, also lowering the costs of software development by a substantial amount by improving the productivity of the developers. And then third, automating what I call the application infrastructure. And that is, as most applications are developed in different environments, they start in a software development test environment that's very simple, low security requirements, and not a lot of scale because it's just the software being written there. And then as the software matures, it gets moved to a test environment. And there's stronger security requirements and a little more scale there. Then it goes to the quality assurance environment, and there's even tighter security requirements there and even bigger scale. And then eventually, when it's ready to go, it goes to production. So what the PaaS environment does is it automates this progression of software and underlying infrastructure through infrastructure as a service, and allows them to work very closely together in a much more streamlined fashion, so that process works in a very automated way, again, making the development faster, smoother, and more efficient.
All right, I think that's going to be a good place to come back to after we take this break. You're listening to the Federal IT Challenge, brought to you by VMware on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and I'm speaking with Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Chief Cloud Officer for VMware U.S. Public Sector. Today's topic is the keys to tapping into the potential of cloud computing for the government.
Reduce costs and increase application availability with server virtualization with VMware at VMware.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Federal IT Challenge brought to you by VMware on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. I'm speaking with Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Chief Cloud Officer for VMware U.S. Public Sector. Today's topic is the keys to tapping into the potential of cloud computing for government. Now, Doug, we ended that last section on platform as a service. We just started talking about software development. I think that's a great segue into software as a service, because I think that's the most obvious area of the three that we just have been talking about where there's innovation possibilities. So what should agencies keep in mind as they're moving applications to the cloud? And I'm going to venture out to say, isn't this as much about business process re-engineering than it is about just changing the way your software is hosted?
Ultimately, where you get to a higher degree of innovation, which the expected value and return on that innovation should be higher, is absolutely what you're referring to, which is getting to a business process re-engineering kind of an approach, or doing something that's very different in terms of how the business is conducted or the mission of the agency is conducted. But that said, there is a journey here as well. So the journey initially is about rehosting of applications from the existing legacy environment over to the virtual cloud infrastructure. That is the low-hanging fruit for continuing to drive cost savings and efficiency throughout the ecosystem of technology. That is the starting point from an application standpoint. Then the next stage is building on and taking advantage of what I described previously in the PaaS layer discussion that we had, which is beginning to develop new software and even enhancements to existing software we call microcode or modular software development. Just taking those new efforts or functionality enhancements over to a PaaS cloud environment, and then taking advantage of the cloud infrastructure so that the applications are cloud aware and are able to take advantage of what the cloud infrastructure can do for them. And then finally is really this last layer of innovation. Phase three in the application layer is about developing new services intended to be consumed by federal agency employees and public citizens via mobile devices, smartphones, tablets, and even laptops and the like, so that the entire way that they conduct their jobs or interacting with their government are very mobile, free of the tether of the PC, and are able to be conducted very efficiently regardless of what else they might be doing in their personal lives or work lives at that particular moment in time.
One thing about software we hear a lot about is the email as a service. That's where a lot of agencies are going first, or you know, putting certain applications into the cloud, the public-facing, public affairs websites. Is that really innovative, or is that just, again, that first step of, well, let's just reduce our costs by having someone else host it, manage it, do the upkeep, and the innovation from something that's like email maybe will come later, where all of a sudden you bring in SharePoint or another peripheral service that you go, okay, now that, because we're in the cloud, that makes that integration much easier to email.
So clearly, in my view, you get some of both with that perspective. So, you know, rehosting email into the cloud is somewhat innovative, but it's an early stage innovation. It is more about cost savings and eventually agility and setting the stage for the next level of innovation, which would be, you know, adding enhancements like you mentioned, integrating in social media capability, providing improved accessibility across multiple devices, and that so it becomes more of a setting the stage for phase two as opposed to true innovation. Great thing to do, saves money, but really provides the foundation to continue the innovation journey.
So the software innovation that we're talking about here is going to come after you do that low-hanging fruit, that initial step. And where do you see the biggest area of software innovation potential to come from? Is it really the business applications, finance, HR, procurement, or is it more the business, you know, mission-critical type apps?
Again, on the continuum of the journey, I have no doubt that these traditional back-office applications, like many of the HR applications, for example, even time card management and performance management from an HR standpoint, and other types of traditional HR applications, are great candidates for a complete SaaS model. And it doesn't matter whether that's a, you know, federally owned and operated shared services center SaaS organization, or a, you know, private sector SaaS organization, or more likely a combination of the two, a hybrid cloud interconnected through standards and interoperability from a technology standpoint. That is one area that is ripe for the taking from a cloud journey perspective. But it needs to go further than that from an innovation standpoint. As I mentioned, the IT budget's only 15% of the federal government's budget. So if you want to get into the other 85%, you've got to innovate for the mission. And that is to develop and deploy mobile applications and software in a SaaS model that improves the safety of our borders, that improves the safety and the efficiency of air travel, that produces higher quality patents, that makes the food supply safer. Basically, in general, anything where cost savings and improved citizen satisfaction would be the desired end result. That's really innovation.
And now to go down these paths, one of the key things is some non-technology issues around cloud innovation. I think we're going to go back to the earlier segment when we talked about procurement and the challenges around procurement. Where do you see some of the areas for that are ripe for reform or at least improvement when it comes to procurement in the federal government?
Well, first of all, this is a very tough nut to crack. And I am aware that there are some interested parties on the Hill that are attempting to modernize this environment. These FAR regulations and the procurement rules were written a long time ago for a technology environment that we have long since moved on from. And so from that perspective, in general, the contracting process needs to be streamlined. And the expertise of those that are carrying out the process on the government side really needs to keep up with the changes, not just in technology, but in the models of consumption in general. In addition, there needs to be more accurate ways for cross-cloud comparisons of what the service is. Is this an apple, to an apple? Or if it is an apple to an apple, do they have the same desired taste? This makes it a little trickier, right? Is how good is the apple compared to the other apple? So a framework for both cost and service and capability comparisons. And then finally, and perhaps most fundamentally, the transition from acquiring physical assets to acquiring services from an operations consumption perspective. These are fundamental shifts in the procurement system of the federal government, but absolutely need to happen in order for cloud to really take and have its full effect.
Are you seeing a little bit about this changing now? Are you seeing some of the shifts happening slowly even?
I would definitely say there are some shifts that are occurring slowly. I mean, in a way, you can look at the infrastructure as a service BPA that GSA put in place as an initial starting point for transitioning over to this methodology. But clearly what that was a initial stepping stone attempt to live within the existing frameworks of the federal procurement model to make it work as best they could. And clearly there were some lessons learned there, and there is some value being derived from that government-wide acquisition vehicle. But that said, it is just an initial stage. It's not a transformation that keeps pace with the progress that the industry has made with respect to cloud computing.
Sounds like something for another show. Now, we are almost out of time. Before I let you go, let's talk about advice. If you're a CIO, if you're in the business world and you're saying, okay, I want to innovate, I want to move to the cloud, what are two or three things you'd tell a CIO or tell a federal government employee to really keep their eyes on, to really pay close attention to?
To have a vision and a plan for the journey. I keep referring to it as a journey. And one of the fundamental mistakes that I'm seeing numerous CIOs and CTOs take is they jump to a roadmap. And as I keep saying, a roadmap is not going to help you if you have no idea where you're going. So you have to have a vision and then a plan for the journey to cloud computing.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to the Federal IT Challenge brought to you by VMware on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and I've been speaking with Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Chief Cloud Officer for VMware U.S. Public Sector. Today's topic was the keys to tapping into the potential of cloud computing for the government. Please join us for next month's show on another edition of the Federal IT Challenge when we discuss creating meaningful cost savings in the government. And to hear this show and all the shows in its entirety, or learn more about virtualization can help your agency, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
To hear this show in its entirety and learn more about how virtualization can help your agency, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.